Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Susan from Murphy's. Welcome, Susan.
Thanks, Michael.
How are you?
Good.
Great. Modern technology works again.
I know, at the last minute.
At the last minute. Wonderful. It's great to have you on the air today.
Thanks.
Susan, I understand you were at the Santa Sabina New Year's retreat last year.
I was at the Santa Sabina New Year's retreat last year.
The first annual Santa Sabina New Year's retreat.
Yeah.
Yes. Tell me about your experience.
Well, you know, the New Year's retreat every year has traditionally been my favorite retreat. I've been in all locations, and I loved Santa Sabina. You know, for me, it felt like a very privileged environment, you know, a holy place where that facilitated my ability to focus my attention in the moment.
Oh, good. Always a good thing.
Always a good thing. And
yeah.
I really liked the facility. I liked where it was, you know, the openness both inside and outside, and, of course, the rooms and the food and the kitchen and the meditation hall, and then the walks outside at the side of the mountain that overlooked the bay.
I was there also, and for me, it as you said, it really had all of those wonderful elements that to me really, as you said, assist me in looking inward.
Yes, and you know, I really appreciate, it was a little bit, it seemed to me, I could be wrong, but it seemed like it was a facility that allowed more people to come, which is always inspiring to me because Sangha, you know, Sangha just carries us, and to be with that number of people there in the silence looking inward, it was just, you know, it was inspiring.
Yes, yes, yeah. I mean, to be there with 50 people all meditating together, everybody looking inward, and, you know, I project incredible willingness onto everybody.
Yes.
And as you said, Sangha carrying us, and for me there's a real, I don't know what the term is, kind of a slipstream effect, you know, in cycling where the ones ahead of you do all the work and it kind of helps me to come along behind.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yes.
Yes. And the thing also I like is I like doing it over New Year's. I'm not quite sure if I quote the Buddhist tradition correctly, but that whole idea that the way we come into the new year is the way that we will be the whole year around. So if we're meditating and looking within and being present and right then on New Year's Eve and into the new year, we have a really good chance at carrying it forward.
Yes, yes. I had forgotten all about that. Do you want to say a little bit more about what that experience is and what the idea is?
Well, I think for me it's probably similar to how New Year's resolutions at one point before ego took over.
You
know, the whole idea of it, of finding the willingness to stay present, and you know, part of the New Year's retreat is that there's meditation on New Year's Eve, really all evening long and into the wee hours of the next morning. And I always think it's neat because I'm actually a morning person and I have small children. And so to stay awake and sit and walk and sit and prepare food together into that new year, you know, committed to looking within and, I don't know, ending suffering, whatever the words would be, staying with ourselves, with this group of people in this holy place, is just a privilege that I am very grateful to have experienced and would certainly invite people and recommend that they experience it as well.
Yes, yes. And so I'll just mention the dates. It's December 28th through January 2nd, and the details are on the website. And as you said, it's over New Year's. And yes, you're correct. It's a big facility, and so we can have a lot of Sangha there, which is really wonderful. And that idea of how I enter the new year is the way that I want to be with myself through the new year, I think is really
And, you know, unfortunately, I don't have it right in front of me, and I don't know if you do, but I think there's a email class and this New Year's retreat has a theme.
Yes, indeed. Do you want to share the theme?
Well, I don't. I don't have it in front of me, so I don't know. Do you have it in front of
me? I'll tell you. The theme is, what you practice is what you have.
Oh, well, there you go.
There you go. And the email class precedes the retreat, so the email class is coming up. It begins November 9th, and it goes through December 5th. And then the retreat again is December 28th through January 2nd. So it's really a great opportunity to steep ourselves in the practice beforehand through the email class and to carry that with us into the retreat.
The thing I like, and I know we have to end, the thing I like about that is that with the email classes, we get to practice that in daily life. And for me, or at least for me, and then when we go on retreat, we have a little bit more support, you know. We're by ourselves in the silence and the privileged environment. Somebody's cooking for us, you know. But both places are possible to practice when we have Sangha to practice with, both whether it's in the email class or, you know, on a retreat. So I like that. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can take that practice with you, whether you're at home or on retreat. And to me, the beautiful thing about it is it's all the same thing.
Yeah.
We're always just practicing, coming back here,
yeah,
seeing what's going on. How do I cause myself to suffer? How do I maintain that illusion?
Yep. And tell me again, what is the tell me, say one more time, what I practice is what I have?
What you practice is what you have.
Yeah, so there you go. And we get to see how what we practice is what we have. And we're right there in the moment practicing, you know, off in worry or whatever. We're in worry. When we come back into the moment, we're practicing being in the moment. When we turn our attention toward joy, we practice being joyful.
It's great. It's kind of straightforward, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
It's exceedingly straightforward.
Yeah.
When I'm joyful, I'm joyful.
Yep. Yeah. And all of these things support us in practicing. You know, practicing. Yeah.
Yes. And when it's okay that when I'm practicing worry, what I have is worry.
Right.
You know, when that's okay and I'm aware of that, it's so much more helpful than just to be in worry and to believe it and not really be aware of where I am or how I got there.
Yeah, because if I'm practicing being with worry, then I'm just being with worry.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Susan, thank you so much for your persistence and for joining us tonight.
I'm glad I got through. Thanks a lot for offering the program, Michael. Take care.
You're welcome. Good night.
Bye.
Good evening and welcome to Open Air. Tonight it's our privilege to have with us Dave, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. A little bit cold. Yeah, we've had a weather change here in the last week or 10 days, and I suddenly remembered winter.
Yeah. So winter has arrived at the monastery?
Well, I wouldn't call it winter yet. It's just a very, kind of a little taste of it. You know, we've been basking in the heat for months, and it, you know, you kind of settle into this illusion that it's going to go on like that forever. And then,
yes. You
know, one day you wake up and, you know, you realize, I'm cold.
Right.
I was joking with somebody today that, you know, there's this little transition that happens, actually both times of the year, in the fall and the spring, where, you know, the body has to adjust. I don't know if you know that one, but, you know, every time of year, every year at this time, you know, the thought goes through, oh, my God, I'm never going to make it, you know, because, you know, here at the monastery, we live really close to the elements. And so I was like, oh, geez, you know, if it's going to be this cold now, what about, you know, in December? But then the body does this amazing thing where it just adapts, and then it just, you know, it's all fine. So I was joking with somebody earlier today that, oh, Lord, I'll be glad when that happens.
Tell me more about the body adapting. That's fascinating.
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, I wonder, actually, that's funny. I wonder if people in the world have that experience. You know, we live essentially a lot of the time without heat. You know, we go in, the monks here, we live, and we stay in these little hermitages, and you could say they're heated, but you'd have to put big quotes around that. And also, I mean, for a lot of us, I think it'd be interesting to hear what the strategies the other monks use, but, you know, we're hardly ever there. And so,
yes.
know, it just, there just isn't time to worry about trying to build a fire and getting something going a lot of times. And sometimes, you know, you just have these little strategies where you have this enormous stack of blankets and you know how to get up in the morning and get your clothes on really fast to get with the show and all those kind of things.
Yes.
But it's interesting that, you know, and during the day, you know, we're generally in the cold. You know, if it's cold, we're cold. If it's hot, we're hot.
Yes.
And it's interesting that the body really does adapt to that. It's an amazing thing, these bodies that we have. Because, you know, right now, it's actually not cold at all. I mean, I think it's, you know, it got down in, like, you know, in the 40s last night. You know, that's not very cold. But the body is used to something else and it says, that's cold. But, you know, I can tell you this because I know from doing it years and years and years, you know, December, January will come along. It'll be, you know, in the 30s all day, pouring rain, and it'll be just fine. You know, it'll be, and we won't even really notice the cold because the body will have made this transition kind of into this other state. And so it's fun. It's fun to know that and to kind of anticipate that happening. And also, the other thing you get to do is you get to break out all your groovy clothes, and it's kind of like you have this gear that'll help you get through, and that's always really fun too.
Yes. That's fun. And I project when we live closer to the elements, it's harder to maintain that illusion of separation.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It is. I think it's good for people. I really do.
Yeah.
I think it's good for us. You know, to be able to control your environment is, you know, it's not really, I mean, I know everybody's going for that, but it's, I say it's not that good of a thing because, you know, you get to see how strong you are. Do you know what I mean? When
yes.
you don't get to control your circumstances.
Yes.
And it's not like we get to control our circumstances anyway. You know, that's what people are talking, when they call on the radio show, are talking about. Everybody's
right.
talking about the circumstances they can't control.
Right.
You know, that's where the problems arise. But,
yes.
of course, they're not problems at all. There really are opportunities to find out who we are. And so even on a physical level, it's nice to be challenged and to, you know, kind of find out who you really are just in relationship to things that are just way bigger than anything you can do anything about.
Yes. As you said that, I was just noticing from my own life, it seems like there are several kind of big things, circumstances that are in transition, somebody would say, out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a real kind of, ego has a real resistance to that not knowing, that uncertainty. And yet, I suspect as I pass through that, there'll be, as you said, a tremendous kind of appreciation for my ability to respond to those.
Oh, and you know that from your experience, I know.
Yes.
I've done that over and over and over again.
That's
always the way it is. You know, the reason ego resists something that's, quote, out of control is it can't, it can't determine sort of the outcome within us.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, like, I might have an idea that I'm inadequate to something, and life, you know, generally doesn't cooperate with that. It says, oh, no, you are. Here, just find out. Here's
right.
an opportunity.
Right.
And we hate it. You know, we complain. That's what we all, you know, we moan and complain and all that kind of stuff. But then when we really go through, we realize, oh, that was exactly what I needed. You know, how am I going to find out who I am without being in circumstances that force me out of this really limited sort of conception of myself that conditioning is always forcing me into?
Yes. That's my experience, definitely. Dave, we have several callers here.
Okay, great. Hey, Michael, before we go on to that person, I did want to just say something about Santa Sabina, too.
Great.
Just to kind of throw in my two cents.
Yes, please.
It really is a great opportunity, and I hope people will consider taking advantage of it. You know, what I was thinking of as you and Susan were talking is, you know, we just, as an organization, we just got finished putting a whole lot of energy and intention into the work in Africa. And just kind of, you know, recovered from that, and we're getting back on our feet. And then, of course, our attention turns immediately, okay, well, what's next? And what's fun to me and also sort of inspiring to me about what happens within the organization is the next thing is always some form of practice, you know?
Yes.
And so it's neat to, like, I just had an experience. I participated in a retreat in North Carolina. We have a retreat going on. There's nothing wrong with your retreat going on right now here at the monastery. And so we're continually having experiences of why we do what we do.
Yes.
You know, oh yeah, this is about ending suffering. This is about moving out of the world of egocentric karmic conditioning into a much happier, much bigger place. And, you know, and the Santa Spina retreat is the same way. I mean, that's what that's for, is to remind us who we are and what practice is all about and what we really want to give our lives to. And so it's there's kind of a thread that goes through everything that happens, even when it's something that's as seems as remote from that as the work in Africa. There's a practice thread in it. And then, you know, as soon as we move out of that content, we're headed, you know, in some other direction, and it's generally something else that just supports practice.
Yes, yes. And in my experience, that practice thread is really strong. It's like a rope.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I can see it in the work in Africa. And as you say, always coming back to practice, really as a foundation for everything that we're doing.
Yeah, and going on retreat is a really important part of that, because, you know, occasionally we just need to get out of our, like, well, it's kind of like what we were talking about before, our kind of the environment that we've created where we feel, you know, as much as we can, comfortable and kind of in control of things, you know.
Yeah.
To take ourselves out of that, go to a situation where we, you know, completely out of control, which is the situation the person is in on retreat, and then find out in that, you know, who am I? Who am I without all the things I feel like I need to be happy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we get to find out that, it's like we get in more intimate touch with ourselves. And, you know, for folks who don't live at a monastery and who are, you know, practicing diligently in the world, it's just really important to have that experience occasionally, you know.
Oh, yes.
To remember what this whole thing is all about.
Yes, yes, I can certainly vouch for that. To really put myself in a, you know, 24-hour day for however many days environment where it is practice. Everything is practice.
Mm-hmm.
I sleep and it's practice. I wake in the morning. I meditate. I eat in silence. I do working meditation. I'm in group discussion. It's all in the privileged environment. It's all designed to assist me to see who I am.
Yeah, it's true. And the other thing it does is it can show you where you are in life. Because, you know, when we do have a lot of control, one thing we it seems like we have a lot of control over is kind of what's going on in the mind and how things look. And sort of, so for example, we might really, it's easy to deceive ourselves, in other words, especially around practice.
Yes.
It's like, oh, yeah, I know where I am. I'm really on track. I know where I need to go. But then going on, you suddenly, things open up and you suddenly get to see things that you never would allow in an environment where you could kind of control all the input that's coming in.
Yes, yes, yes. A great reason to go on retreat.
Yep. So anyway, that was my little plug for it.
Perfect. I appreciate that. And we've had a couple more callers join us in the meantime.
Well, we better get going, huh?
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hello, it's Ramita from Charleston.
Hey, Ramita.
Hi, Dave.
How are you doing?
I'm doing much better now. I was on retreat with you and in North Carolina. I had a wonderful time, but boy, did I have a rocky return.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I always wonder, you know, after being together with people, you know, what happens, I wonder, when they leave? So it'll be fun to find out in your case anyway.
Yeah, well, I called Sherry. We got off retreat on Tuesday, and I called last week and talked with Sherry, and I realized after that call how I had been identified with that sort of ecstatic, mystic part of myself that had such a tremendous opening on the retreat.
Uh-huh.
And then after a massive dose of self-hate beating me up for calling and got to work with that some, I moved into this place of, I guess it was just egocentricity really jockeying to try to get back into its comfort zone.
I see. Now let me ask you about that. When you said you were identified with that mystic state, what do you mean by that? Do you mean that you feel like you were identified with a part of you, or does it feel more like you were just kind of home?
Well, it was different this time than other retreats. I feel, let's see, I was, after I left, I was very high energy, very high energy. And there were, I thought that was me, and this is going to be, I thought that was center.
Uh-huh.
And then dealing with the self-hate, which sort of sucked all that juice out of it,
mm-hmm.
Then looking and saying, you know, I bet that was an identified place before the self-hate came. It was just very high on the positive, ecstatic end, not the painful, I'm suffering end.
Interesting. Yeah, could be. You know, another thing that happens, I don't know how this would fit with your experience, is that we get, well, in those high-energy places, it's not like the place itself is a place of identity, but we lose consciousness just because it feels so good. You know, we stop, we forget that we're in relationships of voices, that self-hate is lurking around to kind of pull that energy. And so it's kind of like we set ourselves up accidentally kind of as a sitting duck on top of it, and we become an easy target for something like self-hatred.
Well, that may be it. Maybe that high place felt was like an opening, and there was not that the guard was needed, but I fell back asleep,
uh-huh.
and
yeah.
self came in. It's been after that 24, 48 hours of really going back and forth. I got into this like almost a mild level of suffering. It was just this hyper vigilant. There's something wrong, but not really. Almost, and then I started hearing the voice that if I'm not that ecstatic state, something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's lasted most of the week. And working, there was then resistance to practice. I mean, I would be doing my sitting practice, but I wouldn't be listening to the archives. I'd hear voices saying, you know, going out to the monastery on retreat would not be a good idea. You know, you've overdone it. Calm down. You can handle this part. You've just been on retreat for a while,
mm-hmm.
and you should be able to cruise. And not true.
Yeah.
Not true.
Yeah, all of that is such classic conditioning, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
and it's
just so what it does. You know, it uses the energy of center, we could say, you know, whatever that opening was for you. And it's, in a way, it's like it can, the more energy that's there, the more it has to use. If it can get you to believe, you know, to step out of that into some kind of story it's creating, you know, so there's the opening. There's the energy, you know. It'll talk you into something that's not that anymore, and then suddenly you're not there, and then everything is happening in relationship to that. You know, that's what we talk about as pseudo Zen. So, conditioning is talking about center, like, you know, you should get back there, but of course that's the last thing in the world it really wants. It just wants to, keep you in some kind of a, you know, thinking, conditioned mind sort of a place about it. So that it can be using that energy up to, you know, kind of run its schemes and cause you to suffer and keep you out of that place where you're just there and everything's okay.
Yeah, and any time I was in the dialogue with it, that juice was being sucked.
Absolutely. Yep.
It feels like I've told you, you know, the last 6 months or so has been quite a remarkable part of practice for me, and coming back this time, the experience of backlash, which hadn't been a clear experience before. Well, now I've got a clear.
Now it is.
yeah. So to be able to watch that, and sort of the reassurance is telling me, you know, I've been practicing. I've been able to see. I'm, you know, even though it feels like something's wrong, everything's okay, and this is egocentricity. And working with that until I think listening to the archives a couple days ago, someone, Sherry, I think, mentioned one of the peace quotes, and it just popped me out.
Huh.
Oh, I'm back.
Fascinating. That's so interesting. And if you were to, I know that's the kind of thing it's really kind of hard to talk about, but if you were to kind of step back and look at, like, what was going on there? How, what made that shift happen? What would you say?
Well, a couple things. The shift, it was gradually having to reassure myself to, again, trust practice so I could resume some of the activities that I do that I know support my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was able to, you know, listen to the archives again and do a little bit of journaling, I was strengthening the heart and moving away from the, or able to recognize the thinking and the voices when they come up and come, let them go. And then when I heard that peace quote, it just, it sort of tipped the scale. Like,
yeah, it was
okay.
Kind of like, it's kind of like you're preparing the ground.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're doing the practice, you're doing, like, on a real nuts and bolts level. You're sitting, listening to the archives, you're doing all the things that you know support practice, even in the middle of all that, sounds like that real sort of chaotic experience, and you're sort of preparing the ground, knowing that if you just do the practice and prepare that ground, then sooner or later, it'll just, that shift will magically happen, and you'll be back where you want to be.
Exactly. It was very much built on the faith and trust in practice and then the experience that it works. Just stick
mm-hmm.
with it, even if it doesn't feel like it's happening. This is what I need to be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been on a little jag that's real similar to what you're saying, I think. You know, where just getting it that the experience I'm having is really pretty irrelevant in the sense of, well, like you were saying, you know, so this thing happened to you. Conditioning would want to make a big deal out of it, which sounds like it really tried to. Make a bunch of meaning out of it and just create a whole bunch of stuff. And what you did is you just did the practice on a real tangible level. So that's the little jag I've been on. Well, let's just sit. Let's do the reassurances. Let's, you know, do a 30-day retreat or whatever it is that is kind of in front of me right there to do just to support practice. And then what that does is I know I'm doing practice. I'm just cruising along. I'm step by step in the middle of my day in real practical ways doing a practice. And so I may be in a state where it's just like completely chaotic and there's all kinds of stuff going on, or, you know, maybe self-hate is there or whatever. And it doesn't really even, that's just part of the process. You know, that's just part of what gets seen and part of the opportunity that's there. And there's that step-by-step, okay, doing the practice, that keeps it, it sort of just creates the environment where all that's okay and it all is going, I can know it's all going where I want to go.
Yes, and one of the insights that I've taken home from this retreat was that just because what I'm seeing is not comfortable or pleasant doesn't mean I'm not centered and that this isn't practice.
Absolutely. You could even go a step further. You know, like in that situation you were in up until a couple of days ago, you know, a person could look at that and say, you know, this is an indication I'm really on the right track.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because you've stirred up conditioning. You're looking at stuff. You've pried open that door that conditioning's always trying to keep shut that says, you know, conditioning always saying, don't look here. Don't see me. Don't look at me. Look over there. You know, pay attention to that. Don't see what's going on. And we can tell when there's that kind of chaos going on that door is open. We're actually in the place that's forbidden to us in the conditioned world, seeing what's happening. And that's really as good as it gets.
Yeah. And it's only because of the guidance that I receive and the practice and the retreat and all of the effort that I'm putting into it that I'm able to see that now. So I was able to bring some gratitude, even in the midst of, you know, it felt very shaky, but saying,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is what happens when I've been practicing.
Yeah, that is just so true. And I think what you're saying is really the key to a happy life is just knowing that everything is truly an opportunity for practice. You know, we make little jokes all the time about how hard things are a practice opportunity, but there's something to that. You know, that attitude of mind that says, even this, you know, it may be very painful, very difficult, confusing, humiliating, frustrating, whatever it is. Even this is a gift to me. This is here to show me how I cause myself to suffer and to show me what other possibilities are there. You know, that attitude of mind, it makes sense of everything.
Oh, well, thank you so much for being here, Dave. And I'm going to say goodnight and pass the torch to the next person. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your practice.
Thank you. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Ramita. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have the privilege of being facilitated by Dave, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Dave, it's very inspiring when I project such commitment onto people and willingness to practice and to see self-hatred and to find that, as Ramita said, faith, trust, and practice.
Yeah, me too. It's inspiring also to me. You know, and just that, conditioning is trying so hard to get us to give up all the time.
Yes.
You know, it's just that it's the endless campaign. You know, you can't do this. You're not adequate, or it's not working, or it's too hard, or whatever the current method is.
Yes.
And just the willingness and the determination to just keep taking those steps, you know, just keep sitting, keep showing up, going on retreat like we were talking about earlier, participating in whatever practice or program or whatever it is that helps us to remember who we are. That is, it seems like it's a really powerful decision for a human to make.
Yeah, it's the hero's path.
It really is, yeah.
Dave, we're going to have a quick sponsor break here, and then we'll be right back.
Great.
If you suddenly find yourself believing the voices in your head, don't panic. Just remember these three easy steps. Stop, drop, and breathe. That sequence again is stop, drop, and breathe. This public service announcement is brought to you by Voice Busters Incorporated. Purveyors of the finest practice tools and reminders since 2008. Visit us on the World Wide Web at thevoicescartoons.org.
Stop, drop, and breathe. Stop, drop, and breathe.
Uh-huh.
Welcome back to Open Air. Dave, we have five more callers.
Okay, let's go.
Next call, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself? Next call, you are now live on the air. If you're there, could you please introduce yourself? Okay, we'll go on to the next one. Next call, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Anna from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Hey, Anna.
Hi. I was just calling. I feel like I've had a really big week for me. I was in this sort of place where things were sort of unraveling. You know, conditioning was saying it was falling apart,
mm-hmm.
But what it feels like now is that it was sort of unraveling, and it sort of was at this place where it was like I was just going to practice, like other things just had to sort of be put aside, and you know, plans had to get changed, and it just became obvious that that's what was required.
Yeah, what was required was to practice.
Right. It was totally required. And it was clear to me, and it was, you know, it was just like, this person needs support right now. And then there was like someone who showed up that was like, and we're going to do it for her. And that's the most important thing.
So just let me just clarify that for people, in case that can confuse anybody. This person is you, you might say, the person who's, you know, that in you which is practicing or, you know, leading the life you're leading. And,
yeah.
And you realize that this person who you are really needs support, and that person who needs support is in you, and also that which can provide the support is within you, and you found that also.
Yeah, and so it was like this experience of really caring for myself,
mm-hmm.
and it was like this, you know, And then, you know, it was just like, okay, what can I do to make her life easier? You know, and you know, give her a lot of sleep, cook really good food for her, make sure that, you know, she's having all the opportunity to practice that she needs, and, you know, even more, and just really, it was kind of this, I don't know that I've ever really been in service to myself,
uh-huh,
like I have been this past week.
That is a great way of talking about it. I love that, to be in service to yourself.
Yeah.
In service. You're doing service by taking care of this person that you're involved with 24/7.
Yeah. It really felt like that. Like,
mm-hmm,
you know, like for the love of others. It was kind of this bizarre thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it was this, you know, this body that I'm living in, but it was really like this feeling of like, wow, this person is suffering. Like, what can I do to help?
Yeah, it's sort of part bizarre, part kind of amazing and wonderful to get to that place where the you, who you always thought you were, actually you realize that's just another. That's just another person just like any of the other people you might run into on the street.
Yeah. It was, and it worked. Like, it was like, at some point it was just like, you know, like kind of just, you know, all this suffering. And then it's some, like what you were speaking of, you know, with Ramita, or what I project you were speaking of with Ramita, it just, at some point it was like, you know, energy came back, and,
mm-hmm,
and it was like, you know, all the synchronicities started happening, and all the, you know, energy and just beauty and laughter, and it was all back.
Mm-hmm.
And
I would project that the key element, tell me this, if this is your experience, and if it's not, tell me that. But I would project that the key element in that is the willingness to turn your attention away from the outside, you know, all the whatever the stuff that's going on, just
mm-hmm,
to the inside, into that person. There's just that shift in attention, and suddenly you go from a world where things are difficult to a world where things are kind of wonderful.
Yeah, and it became clear, like, this whole thing, one of the things that I've been really, like, has become clear for me is this not taking it personally,
mm-hmm,
you know, really not taking it personally. Like, and it feels like that's been really huge for me because, you know, what conditioning wants to do is, like, get me into this conversation about meaning and what does this mean and what are they thinking and and this whole thing. And that whole conversation just takes my attention away from caring for this person where I can make a difference, to trying to interpret what's going on with these externals and what does that mean about me.
Absolutely. And don't you think that's the entire purpose of that conversation, is to turn
your
attention away?
Yeah. And it's like what conditioning wants to do is to create this life where I'm kind of run down a little bit and,
mm-hmm,
and maybe have a lot of, you know, sort of stimuli running at me and then from that state try to make a decision to choose myself. And it's just like I realize that when I'm actually caring for myself, I just have such a better chance of making the decision, like the non-suffering decision.
Yeah, and isn't it fascinating that the awareness of the possibility of not taking yourself and your life personally is what makes it possible to really care for yourself?
Yeah, it is kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wants to be, you know, conditioning wants it to be about mine and me and what I deserve and what I should get and
mm-hmm,
what they mean in relation to me and just all about me, but not even really about me, really. I mean, in the sense that it's not, this whole thing is not going to be something that cares for me. It's just this distraction, you know, of my energy, siphoning it off in this conversation about what all this external stuff means about me instead of actually what could I do to care for myself.
Yeah, that is so true. And I think what you're really finding out for yourself is this, quote, me, unquote, isn't you.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
I'm
projecting here because this is my experience, but what I might call the most intimate experience of, you know, quote, me, is the place that you're caring from.
Right.
Is that your experience also?
Yeah. That's like where I actually feel like my feet are on the ground and like, I feel connected to all that is, and
mm-hmm.
and there's like a sense of like energy and power, and like the energy is like aligned, and it feels like when the energy is like all in line.
Yeah,
does that
exactly.
make any sense? It's like there's like a everything's, you know, kind of, I don't know, solid.
Yeah, you're connected.
Yeah.
You're connected to this being who
right.
you might say your role or your job is to take care of,
uh-huh.
but you're not entangled in that person's confusion about the way things are. In other
yeah.
words, you're not entangled in what they worry about, what their concerns are, like that.
Yeah.
You know, it really is like another person. It's like, you know, somebody walks up to you on the street and they start telling you your problems. It's not very likely that you're going to get entangled in the way that they are, you know,
yeah.
and see things the way they are. It's more likely it's like, gosh, this is, you know, I can really see this is a big deal for you, but, you know, this is not really touching me at all. So it's a powerful skill to have that relationship in terms of one's own self and what has always seemed to be, quote, me.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of amazing. And the other thing that's come from this experience is just that, like, I do have tools. Like, there are these things that are available that, that if I pay really, you know, if I actually am practicing,
mm-hmm.
it really does make a difference.
Yeah, it really does. Well, obviously, you've been using them, right? Because it's
right.
like what we were talking about with Ramit a minute ago about preparing the ground, kind of like in a garden.
Yeah.
You know? If you want the plants to grow, you got to get out there, you got to mix in the compost, and you got to stir it up, and you got to do all the stuff that the soil needs. And I'm betting, just because I can't imagine that an experience like you're having would be possible without practice, that you've been practicing. You've
mm-hmm.
been applying those tools just kind of day by day, bit by bit, and you've prepared a place for yourself where in the middle of something that could be really challenging or difficult, you're free to really attend to what's needed instead of just getting lost in it.
Yeah. And the other thing that's come up is I want to make it easier for myself to access practice tools, in the sense that one of the things that came up was like, you know, you should be able to practice in any environment. But then it's like, I was thinking like, you know, well, you could send your kid to whichever school, but, you know, your kid probably has a better chance of getting a pretty good education if you send them to a school where, you know, the teachers are pretty good and it's a pretty,
mm-hmm.
you know, they have good books and they're not going to be fights everywhere and all these sorts of things. And it's like, I kind of want to do that for myself where,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I could just like access practice whenever. And yeah, that's probably possible. I mean, it is possible, but wouldn't it be great if I could put myself, like, create, like, this supportive life for myself where I have a better chance of making a good choice, like, you know, sitting down when I want to sit, when I intend to sit down, or, you know, having supportive sangha, like, you know, just giving myself, like, the best opportunity to be able to take advantage of this lifetime. It just feels like that's one of the things I've been looking at. It's like, how do I, you know, how could I give, like, you know, this person a break and like make it a little easier for me to access that.
For sure. Yeah. Well, if you want to be a championship skier, you know, it'd probably be a good idea to move to Colorado or someplace. You know, you don't want
yeah.
to be in Florida.
Yeah.
If you want to be a ski racer. So it's just like that. I mean, you know, and that thing, you know, well, you should be able to practice anywhere. That's a big stick. You know, a lot of times that gets used, the conditioning uses against people. I mean, it's true. You could, you know, it's absolutely true that everything in life is an opportunity to practice. And I think what you're saying is equally true, that we have to provide we have to put ourselves in the way of it.
Yeah.
Know? We've got to do actually the day by day elements of practice. And we've got to sit. We've got to participate in whatever it is that's available to participate in.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So, but it sounds like you're talking about even bigger stuff than that. You're talking about setting up your life, you're making conscious choices to set up your life in a way that will support your practice.
Yeah, that's what I want to do, because I want to live from, I mean, it's just becoming clear to me that that's, that's where I want to end suffering. Like, I mean, it sounds silly, but I really do. And I just feel a lot of gratitude for you know, having this opportunity to be clear about that, and also to, you know, have this practice and the Sangha and all the supports that the monasteries put out, and all the, like, I don't know, even though it's weird, I've been thinking about, like, the work of, like, past me's or something, like, what happened in the lifetimes before and all this just.
It does have that feeling sometimes, doesn't it?
It like, does. It really does.
I'm so lucky to be, to have discovered this or to have been given this. It almost feels like it's taken a lot of arranging on a part of life to put a person in this kind of place. And like you said, I loved how you said it. Now I can't remember what it was, but something along the lines of you really want to take advantage of the opportunity of this life.
Yeah. So thank you for, just thank you. Yeah,
I'm right with you. It's a big place for gratitude. And like you said, for intention. And, you know, it's so important, too, to get to that place you're talking of where you just get it, that that's actually what I want. I want to end suffering, you know. Or to say it another way, I want to live my life to be able to take care of in the way that you were just talking about taking care of. You know, that's worth giving a life to.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Now I know that. And now they're really, you know, there doesn't need to be any confusion. So good. We know what we want. So let's see how we can provide that for ourselves.
Right.
Because before that, it can be really challenging. It can be extremely confusing, and afterwards too. You know, as condition comes in, and we start and we believe it here and there. But you know, if we haven't got to a place where we realize, you know, that really is what I want. I get that. I want to end suffering. Then you know, we can lend a willing ear to the voices, because they're offering all the other alternatives. But when we get, you know, no, I don't want all that other stuff.
Yeah.
I don't really care what happens with the outside part of my life in particular.
Uh-huh.
I want on the inside to end suffering. And that can, you know, that little understanding is really enough to lead a person to wherever they want to go.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, it's sort of staying in that place too. It's like the constant, you know, conditioning is like, oh, this, you know, what is me? What is it? It's like it's constantly trying to, you know, whatever it can do, like pull me away from that place into crap. And
that's what that daily practice is about. Because every time you sit on the cushion, what you're saying is, no, that's not what I want. I want to end suffering. Or, you know, you call into the radio show or listen to the radio show, or, you know, there's all these other programs that you can be a part of and all these other practices you can do. And so every time you make a choice like that, you're basically saying to conditioning, no, and saying to yourself, no, that's not what I want. I don't want to suffer. I don't want to spend this lifetime wandering around hoping that something outside of me is going to give me what I need. I really want to just be here with this person, knowing that I am what I need. That's all I really care about.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thanks. This is really great. Thank you.
Yeah, that is great. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah. All right. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. You're listening to Open Air. Dave, that was a very powerful conversation for me.
Yeah, a lot of willingness there.
I had the sense of kind of, you know, the kind of clear beacon, the clear lighthouse through the fog, just kind of clearing everything away.
Mm-hmm.
Getting clear about what we're doing, where we're going.
Yeah, you know what's fun to me about that is that kind of experience, it seems to me anyway, it's like it feels like it's given to us. I think both the folks who have called in, kind of there was an element of that in their conversation. It's like, you know, we just do the best we can to show up, and then, you know, these things happen that are really, you can't even explain them or predict them or anything. You just get ready, and and then they come along. And it's like, thank you. You know, it's an interesting game we play where we got to do our our part. You know, we got to show up. We've got to do the practice. But then where that takes us and where that goes, and I mean, that has nothing to do with us at all. That just comes in through a great big open doorway, and we just, if we're willing for it, just kind of go wherever it's willing to take us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I hear that, I get a big sense of receiving.
Mm-hmm.
Receiving. And I know in my daily life there, I have many of those moments of kind of seeing the pothole, the big pothole,
mm-hmm.
and the gratitude for someone pointing it out to me, feels like.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And, you know, where did that information come from? It's like, that is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fun experience. And you're driving past the pothole and say, you know what, I used to fall in that pothole all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Whoever made that makes this available to me to be able to just walk on by. Thank you. Life's a lot better up here than down there.
Yes, yes. Wonderful. We're going to have a sponsor break here, Dave, and then we'll be back.
Okay.
Porch Dog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porch Dog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Music by Trish Bruxford Colligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you swam in a river of joy?
Welcome back to Open Air. Dave, we have a couple more callers here.
Okay, super.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself? That caller is gone. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Nancy from Texas.
Hey, Nancy.
Is it Dave?
It's Dave, that's right.
Hey, hi, Dave.
Hi.
I guess what's really been coming up for me lately is taking it personally, so I'm not at all surprised that that's the theme of the show tonight.
Uh-huh. Okay, good.
It's just been so interesting to notice how strongly the voices want me to get embroiled in an external event.
Mm-hmm.
To the extent of almost writing a novel yesterday, like taking the event and then just almost writing a whole novel that just went way off on various tangents around it.
Yeah, just running with it.
Yes, it occurred to me I really ought to just come in and write the novel instead.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That would kind of work if at the very beginning, you at the first page, it really big, you wrote, conditioning says, and then just let it all go because that's all that's going on.
I can know that in my head.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing how persistently the story keeps representing itself.
Oh, for sure. Well, you know, that's why we talk about it in terms of things like karma. You know, to look at it on just purely a scientific level, it doesn't make any sense. You know, that thing that happened, you know, I understand that what's going on completely. I know there's a conditioning. There's no really way to explain just the incredible intensity of it and the addiction to those, you know, those places, you know, the story, other than this is just something that's really, really big. It's like a momentum moving through time, and I'm just riding the wave.
So can you say a little more about that? I feel like I almost understand you.
Oh, well, so you're describing a situation where, I mean, like yesterday, conditioning is writing the novel, right?
Well, it's just going over and over and over this incident that occurred, and it just won't. Won't shut up.
Uh-huh. Well, and
it keeps getting my attention.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. We would have to say it keeps going, and on your side, there continues to be like a little tug, you know, a willingness to jump in there for some reason.
Ah, and that's what you're calling karma?
Exactly, yeah. It almost, I mean, who knows? We're just talking about things nobody really knows anything about, but if this is how it feels anyway, it just feels way bigger than this one person in this one little situation. You know, it's like this is the way it's always been. You know, there's this movement or momentum or like a wave through time and through people towards that, towards being in those little places, the little worlds that we believe in those little places, struggling and fighting it and suffering, basically.
So what really caught me there was saying the willingness to engage with that. So that's an interesting way to look at it, that I've been willing to engage with that, and I could be willing not to engage with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the choice point. That's what people talk about when they talk about not taking it personally.
Oh, so, okay, so the... So over and over when it comes back, I can just say, I am willing not to engage with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's all kinds of things you can do. You can, you know, return your attention to the breath. You can turn your attention. It all involves turning your attention somewhere. You can turn your attention to something else that's actually here. You know, to look at your hand or look at nature around you or something that's actually here. Because, you know, that story's not here. It's just... it's off somewhere in the imagination. But the tricky part is the willingness to turn the attention away from it. That's the little bit of collusion that happens. And that's what karma, I think, is all about. It's just, you might say that karma is the incredible habit of giving our attention over to the stories in conditioned minds, just over and over and over again. The trick is...
It did occur to me today that every time it came up, I could just bless myself.
Yeah, exactly. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Or another, this is one of my favorite, is to say thank you.
Okay.
You know?
I could do that, too. That would be even easier.
Mm-hmm. Or here's another one. I love you. In your case, I love you, Nancy. I love you. You know?
Wow.
These little things that... I mean, they're, you could say that they're tricks, but they're not really tricks. All there is it's just providing a like a concrete method for turning the attention away from that karmic story. And then to kind of tie it in with what we've been talking about already on the show, something like I love you or actually thank you. Both of those would tend to connect the attention with what, you know, what you might say is real. I mean, you can't really say anything is real, but to a certain extent, you could say that, you know, that being inside of you who is suffering is real. You could say that the life that is moving through you and is animating you is real, you know, and gratitude for that. You know, turning your attention
away
from...
Yeah, the thank you is great. Thank you for noticing that this is causing suffering. That's wonderful.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. or thank you for the beautiful day. You know, thank you for this body that I have. Thank you for the food that I eat. You know, any of that kind of, it's none of that exists in the story, right? Because conditioning is always complaining. It's always, there's always something wrong with everything. There's never anything to feel grateful for. So if you just remembering it's possible to feel grateful, you're out of the story. You've broken that connection with that karmic program that's moving through.
That's great. Okay. Yes, that will work perfectly.
Yeah. It's fun to have little tools like that in the tool bag, you know, when things like that happen.
And I suppose eventually the momentum of this lessens?
Well, yes, and I would bet you that you even have that experience. I bet you could look at things in your life that used to have a lot of pull for you, you know, that would really catch you up when they got kind of came into the sphere and started, you know, doing what they do, that you no longer really attend to all that much. You know, they don't catch you in the way they used to.
Probably, although I will say this seems to be kind of a recurring area of sensitivity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All that means is you're just not finished with it yet.
Yes, I haven't said thank you.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that's what you'll find as you practice with it. That, you know, gradually over time, you know, because that it will lessen. The power of it will lessen. Because, you know, every time, just to talk about it in terms of attention like we have been, you know, every time we turn your attention away from it, you get it that it's not real. You know?
I do know that intellectually.
Right.
And I keep slipping back into that place.
Yeah, and that's what we do. And, you know, that's not a problem. You know, that's not a bad thing. That's nothing to worry about. That's nothing to be concerned about. You know, it's just how it is. That's why they call it practice. You know, we just wear this stuff out. You know, we keep believing it and keep believing it and keep believing it, but we're paying attention, which you obviously are, and we're paying attention while we're getting pulled into it, and then we come out of it, and while we're going back in, and that just, for whatever reason, that's just the process of wearing it out and getting to a place where we don't believe it anymore.
And the payoff is only for conditioning, right?
For going in the story?
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yep.
Because there is a kind of a seductive payoff for somebody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, completely. Yeah, if you want to look, that's actually a really helpful way to look at it. Yeah, somebody's getting something. Yeah, somebody's getting some kind of yummy suffering.
Well, excellent. I'll definitely, now I almost can't wait for it to come back up again.
Yeah, boy, and that's the attitude of mine to have. We were talking about that earlier. It's just, you know, it really everything truly is an opportunity. And it's just fun to approach life that way. It's like, oh, boy, now's my chance to really try this stuff out and to see what I can do about this. You know, because conditioning is always, it wants us to live in dread of it and to feel like, you know, that's what all that talk about. You know, it's bad to be identified. You know, it's bad to believe in the voices. No, it's not. You know, that's just a scam to keep us from paying attention. You know, this is just how it works. We suffer, and we suffer and suffer and suffer, but we pay attention. And as we pay attention, the suffering lessens.
Well, that's great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for joining us, Nancy. You're listening to Open Air. Dave, we have one more caller. We have a couple of minutes.
Oh, okay. Let's try it.
Okay. Caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself? And they're gone.
Ah, okay.
That's a cue for us, I think. Dave, the show's been really great for me, and I feel like as with many, if not all shows, it's a real reminder of what's important to me, what's possible, and what's actually here in front of me, like my hand, as you were talking to Nancy.
Yeah. Yeah, for me too, Michael. It's good that we do this.
Great. Thanks so much for your willingness and your experience and sharing all that. It's a real gift.
Yeah, and thank you too, Michael.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Good night. Bye-bye.